Somerville, Maine, now say foul play is suspected in the disappearance of a toddler. 20-month-old Ayla Reynolds vanished from her father's home. He told investigators he put his daughter to bed, but found her missing the next morning.
It's about just finding where Ayla is and who has her and bringing them to justice.
Police say Ayla Reynolds is 2 feet 9 inches, weighs 30 pounds. Her left arm is in a sling and a soft splint. She has short, thin blonde hair. Police say Ayla was wearing one-piece green pajamas with polka dots with Daddy's Princess written on it.
They believe this is highly unlikely she will be found alive.
Police have found blood in her father's home.
Blood was allegedly found here in the basement of this home in Waterville, Maine. Reynolds says police describe the blood as more than a small cut would produce.
I was just told over maybe 24 hours ago right now that blood was found, and I don't want it to be real.
Police have not named DePietro a suspect or even a person of interest. At the vigil, he refused to comment.
A mother's worst nightmare is what has happened to me.
This is True Crime Brewery. I'm Jill.
And I'm Dick.
Today's topic, what happened to Ayla Reynolds? Ayla Reynolds was born to parents Justin DePietro and Trista Reynolds on April 4th, 2010. The couple was no longer together when Ayla was born, and until 2 months before Ayla went missing, she lived exclusively with her mother.
This is a kind of a complicated social situation. During Trista's pregnancy with Ayla, she first claimed that she didn't know who the father was. For a short time, she had led her boyfriend or fiancé, Ray Fortier, to believe the baby was his. After Ayla arrived, Ray Fortier apparently insisted on a DNA test, and when Ayla was about 7 months old, the DNA test confirmed that Justin DePietro was the father of Ayla. And as you mentioned, according to Trista, Justin had nothing to do with Ayla until he decided to take custody of her in late October 2011. Near that time, it's believed that Trista was having an affair with Justin, despite his relationship with his girlfriend, Courtney Roberts. And at the same time, Trista's fiancé was in prison doing a 10-year term for a sex crime. As I said, it's a complicated social history.
That's for sure. Now, it was at 8:51 a.m. on December 17th of 2011 that Ayla's father, Justin, called the police to say that Ayla was missing from his Waterville, Maine home. He had temporary custody of Ayla since that October, and according to Justin, Ayla was last seen in her bed about 9 p.m. the previous evening. She was only 20 months old. Now, before we get too deeply into this, let's see what Dick has on tap.
Boy, do I have a good one today. So this is a Maine case, so I'm going to do a Maine beer. And There was never any question which Maine beer I was going to choose. It happens to be my all-time favorite, not just of Maine beers, but probably my all-time favorite beer anyway, Allagash Curio. Now, Curio is a triple. It's a Belgian beer. Triple stems from the part of the brewing process in which brewers added up to 3 times the amount of malt from a standard triple, simple malt, simple ale. They tend to be bright yellow gold in color with a spicy, yeasty, and fruity taste. Great beers. Mm. Now, Curio was Allagash's first foray into barrel aging. Curio's aged in Jim Beam bourbon barrels for about 8 weeks. And then the aged beer is then blended back with a portion of a fresh triple. So you got some 8-week-old triple and some brand new triple. And the old triple has been aged in the bourbon barrels.
Okay.
So wait till you taste this stuff. It's a dusty golden color with some light haze. The aroma is bourbon, but not an intrusive bourbon. I mean, it's a nice bourbon aroma.
Okay.
Some vanilla and some fruit. Turns out when you taste it, it's a very smooth with a mellow but stiff alcohol character, warming up with tones of vanilla and ripe fruit. Just an amazing world-class beer.
I know you like it.
I like it so much that when we got married, we served that to our guests.
That's right. We had a keg of it.
We did.
Yep. And it was gone by the end of the night, too. It
didn't last the night.
That's right. Yeah.
I should have had a second cake. But
could have been trouble. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, it is kind of could have been trouble because it's 11.5%. So you got to go easy on this one.
That's right. Well, that's excellent, Dick. Thanks. So let's pour the beer. Nice. Let's slide our stools to the quiet end of the bar, and we're going to talk some true crime.
I'm ready.
So on October 17th, 2011, that's when Justin DiPietro was at the Lewiston, Maine police station requesting the police accompany him to retrieve his daughter. The officer who met with Justin consulted his supervisor, who stated that Karen Small of the Child Protective Services had authorized DiPietro to take custody of his 20-month-old daughter, well, I guess then she was 18-month-old, 18-month-old daughter, Ayla Reynolds.
So why was he requesting custody of her? Because he's not had anything to do with this kid for the first year and a half or so of her life.
It's a very good question, and that's something that we'll delve into. It does seem unusual.
Yeah,
sure.
I mean, he hasn't shown any interest at all in his child.
No. Now, Trista and Justin had previously mutually agreed that Ayla was going to spend some time with Trista's older sister, Jessica, while Trista was entering a short-term rehab program for her drug and alcohol addiction, which had been an ongoing problem for her since before Ayla was even here. So Jessica, according to the DHHS records, was assessed, she went through an assessment process, and she was determined to be an appropriate caretaker for Trista's children. Now, Trista also had a son who was 11 months younger than Ayla, and that son had a different father as well.
It's complicated. We're getting back to this complicated social history again.
It is.
So she has two children by two different men.
Yes.
And the first child she was trying to make her then-fiancé, soon-to-be prisoner fiancé, make him believe that that was his baby.
Right.
Ooh, okay.
I know. But anyway, the police officer came to the door at Jessica's house, Ayla's aunt, and Jessica told the policeman, you need to watch Ayla's reaction when she sees her father, Justin DiPietro. She actually said that Ayla was terrified of him.
So she's seen this guy. I mean, he hasn't been totally absent from her life.
She has had some visits with him, but she's never had an overnight with him.
Okay.
So some visits. But it wasn't anything regular, and it wasn't consistent, and it wasn't lengthy.
So we're going to find out, I hope, why he was awarded custody of her?
Well, Dick, he was actually never awarded custody of her. That's one of the problems with this case.
I see. Mm-hmm. That's suspicious.
It is.
So they go with the police. So the police are there to ensure that the baby, Ayla, is handed over to this guy.
Correct. Yeah.
Even though he has no claim on her. The sister, Jessica, has been determined to be fit to be the caretaker of Ayla and her brother.
Right.
And she's doing that. And Justin shows up with the police and says he's taking Ayla.
Correct.
And he's not taking the other kid because that's not his.
Right. Mm-hmm.
All right. I love it.
I then asked Justin DiPietro to come to the apartment door, the officer documented in his records. After Jessica told him to watch Ayla's reaction, he said to Justin, come on over to the door. And the officer further said, I noted that upon seeing her father, Ayla immediately broke down crying and she attempted to flee.
Yeah, but that didn't matter because they still gave the child to Justin.
Yes, the officer picked up Ayla and handed her over to Justin, and he said that she was crying uncontrollably at that time. Now, Ayla's Aunt Jessica, obviously, she objected to giving Ayla to her father, saying that DiPietro was abusive, and she also said he'd beaten the child in the past.
Does she have grounds for that? She has evidence that he beat her in the past when he was with her?
She didn't have anything to present at that time, apparently. Nothing made a difference because Ayla went with her father at
that point. That sounds like a fucked up mess.
It does. Now, the officer described Ayla as laughing, playing, and attempting to make conversation with him up until the time when she saw her father, when she just lost it.
So it's not just stranger anxiety.
No.
I mean, it sounds like she was okay with this police officer, but sees her father and starts crying.
A bubbly, happy little girl, and sees her father and freaks out and tries to run away.
So wouldn't you think the police officer might think something was amiss?
He might, but I don't think he has any power at that point to do anything.
Well, I don't know. I mean, this is all hindsight stuff, but it sounds like he could have said, we have some claims of abuse on the father's part from the aunt, Jessica.
Mm-hmm.
And the kid, baby, looks at the father and starts screaming. Maybe we need to check on something.
Right.
But that didn't happen.
No, well, here's part of the whole mess. Now, to settle custody battles, DHHS needs to get a court order. Karen Small, from that department, had sidestepped due process by presenting herself to police as having jurisdiction over this matter. Now, Justin DiPietro's mother, Phoebe DiPietro, had told Karen Small that Justin had not legally obtained his parental rights, but when Phoebe contacted Small on October 17th, she said that she was on her way to Portland to pick up Justin and then pick up Ayla at Jessica's house.
This baby or this family is already known to DHHS for Ayla or for some other instance of suspicion?
Well, that's kind of uncertain. There were things going on clearly in the DiPietro home, but then as far as Ayla and her mother Trista, there were some issues with Ayla's little brother about his health care. He'd had some asthma, some things like that. She'd been a drug addict, so she was on drugs. So there were multiple issues, I'm sure.
If you're an addict, that's an automatic referral to DHHS.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if people don't know, that's Department of Health and Human Services.
That's right, and that's a state agency.
State agency.
So it's the state of Maine.
So they're already in the system, and they get a call about the biologic father wanting to assume custody of the child, and there's nothing ordered.
Nothing legally done, nope.
So this woman, this social worker, or DHHS worker, got to watch that pronunciation.
Yeah.
Okay's that. That's kind of mind-boggling.
She lies. And there is some talk about Phoebe DiPietro, Justin's mother, being in a personal relationship, being kind of a friend of Karen Small. Because the two women plotted this out. Justin didn't call and plan it. His mother took care of these things. He lived with his mother. She was picking him up. He was very dependent on his mother.
So the mother is the one who contacted Small, Karen Small?
Right, yep.
And said, we're going to go pick up Ayla.
Yep, she said, I'm on my way to pick up Justin in Portland, and then we're going to go pick up Ayla.
And the social worker said, sure.
Yep.
Basically.
Basically. The actions of Phoebe and Karen clearly indicate that both women decided to ignore the law. Karen Small's assertions to the Lewiston police completely disregarded legal process. And Karen Small didn't even work with the Lewiston office. She worked with the Portland office, I believe.
Right. So there shouldn't have been any way that Justin DiPietro's mother, Phoebe, could have talked to her.
No. And
she talks to Lewiston, because that's where the nearest one they live, and ends up getting things done for her.
Yep. Although, under Maine law, both parents would have equal parental rights, Ayla had always lived with Trista. Now, she had only spent a few hours at a time with Justin, like I said, never an overnight. So in situations like this, the parent that's disputing the custody setup, such as Trista had arranged with Jessica, would need to file a petition for parental rights in the Maine District Court. Then the matter would be decided in family court, not Karen Small or DHHS. They wouldn't have any say in that.
Right. So what should have happened and didn't was that the sister of Trista, Jessica, should have said, you can't take her. You don't have legal precedence to take her.
Yes, but she's a layperson, and the police, You know, this officer had contacted his supervisor, who called DHHS and was told by Karen Small that she had jurisdiction and that Ayla should be handed over. So the officer had no way of knowing.
That's true. As far as the officer's concerned, it was a done deal.
Well, right. And I don't think that Jessica necessarily had the legal ease to know her rights in this situation. The officer didn't even really know what was going on.
True.
So it's just really messed up. Messed up situation on all sides.
It sure is.
So if we go back to September 29th, 2011, Ayla was brought to the hospital by Trista with a complaint of an abnormal gait. Trista reported that Ayla went to her father's house on Thursday, and then that Friday when she woke up from her nap, she noted that Ayla would not bear weight on her right leg. Now, no evidence of abuse was determined, I guess, but Ayla had a bruise on her bottom and her right leg had been external rotation and limited internal rotation. Now, I don't know why that wasn't reported to DHS.
Well, I don't know either. I mean, it's easy in hindsight to say it should have been.
Well, I would think it would at least be suspected. Now, as a physician, you're required to report such things, correct?
Not just as a physician. Anybody in the state of Maine that suspects child abuse is obligated to report it.
Okay.
Again, in retrospect, I have this bad social situation. I have a child that has not been seen much by her father except for brief visits. She comes back from a visit with him, non-weight-bearing, and difficulty walking.
Mm-hmm.
I know the x-ray looked okay.
Well, it said no fracture, right? But that wouldn't tell you what's going on with muscles or tissue, right? Just the bones, yeah.
I mean, the fact of the difficulty with internal and external rotation would indicate that her hip was a problem. Again, it's in retrospect, and it's easy to look through that scope and say, oh, I would have reported that, but it's very suspicious. I think it probably should have been reported
at the time. So that's probably something you would have reported if it was in your pediatric office and you saw this?
If I had seen this child with this history, I would have reported.
Okay.
And now it might not have gone anywhere, because a lot of cases or a lot of reports don't end up going anywhere. But at least it would have been something that was in the record and had been investigated.
Right. In case something happened later, you'd have evidence of a pattern.
Right.
So that did get better, I suppose. The x-ray showed no fracture, but it's something to make note of for sure. Because Justin DiPietro, kind of a shady character. He was a chronically unemployed father of two young children by two different women. And less than 1 week before taking Ayla from her Aunt Jessica, Justin actually went out and took a large life insurance policy against Ayla's life. Now, this was not the kind of policy you'd get for a child so they get money later when they're older. This is where he would get money if Ayla died.
Well, there's a red flag.
Yeah. And he didn't do the same for his other child. Now, he had these two young children, but he didn't do anything about the other child as far as that's concerned. So that's very strange.
Well, did he see? I mean, the other child wasn't living with him.
Well, neither of them were, no.
Did he see the other child? Or do we know that?
We don't know.
Okay.
We don't know a lot about that.
But before he got custody of Ayla, right? Before, not after he got custody of
Ayla. No, less than a week before that time he went to pick her up with the police. This was less than a week before that. And that's why there have been rumors that this was his plan.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, which is a horrible thought to think someone would do that, but we know things like that in this world happen, unfortunately.
I don't know why this guy who is chronically unemployed, why he'd have the money, or where he'd have the money, even, to do an insurance policy like that. And why would he do something like that policy where the money would go to him in the event of her death?
He's not worried about her having health insurance. He's not worried about many of her other needs.
He's not worried about anything with her.
So why is he going out and getting a life insurance policy? That's totally shady. Creepy. I think creepy.
I agree.
You agree. Good. So a month after he took Ayla, October 17th, and about a month after that, it was Monday, November 14th, Jessica Reynolds called the Department of Health and Human Services. Now, Ayla had suffered a broken arm, a Department of Human Services caseworker wrote that Jessica notes that Ayla was placed with Justin DiPietro by a DHHS officer about a month ago. On Friday, she received a call from Justin, and he was freaking out and saying that Ayla had fallen onto her arm up the steps, and it was getting really swollen.
Who'd he call? Jessica?
He called
the
Jessica.
The sister who was supposed to have custody of the
children. Trista's sister, who was watching Trista's little boy and was supposed to have Ayla.
Okay.
So this was upsetting for her, because she didn't want her to go with him in the first place, and now he's calling and saying that she's injured.
And he called her.
He called her, freaking out, telling her that Ayla had fallen onto her arm.
I hope someone told him to take her to a doctor.
He didn't take her to a doctor.
He didn't?
No, but that Saturday, the next day when they woke up, her arm was just super swollen up like a balloon, and Phoebe DiPietro, Justin's mother, took Ayla to the emergency room.
So this accident occurred on a Friday.
Right.
The child was in a great deal of pain. There was swelling.
Correct.
But they didn't do anything until the next day when it was really swollen.
So that Saturday, Phoebe DiPietro takes Ayla to the ER, and they do determine that at this time she does have a fracture. And then when Trista gets out of rehab, she tries to get Ayla back, but she's told that this is a civil matter and they won't help her. Now, Trista did get to visit Ayla and took her to her primary care doctor and was referred to an orthopedic specialist. Now, I printed up that orthopedic consult for you to look at. The orthopedist saw Ayla and stated that he felt the injuries were not consistent with the father's description of what occurred.
Right. I read the report.
Okay.
I read the note. I think it was an ER note, and I don't know who took her to the ER.
Trista.
Trista did. So this happened on a Friday.
Well, actually, I'm sorry. Justin's mother took her to the ER.
Right.
They said it was fractured and put it in a sling and said she needed to follow up with an orthopedic specialist. So Trista takes her to her pediatrician, who gives her the referral to the orthopedist. So the report I gave you was the orthopedist.
Well, and the orthopedist said that she had a fracture. Ayla had a fracture of the distal part of her humerus, which is the upper bone in the arm. And it was not the elbow that fractured, but the long bone, the humerus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is not a common fracture in toddlers.
Not a common one.
Not at all.
Okay.
Toddlers that fall on their arms are going to have what are called buccal fractures, where there's a disruption in the outer layer of the bone, the periosteum, that buckles a little bit, or what's called a green stick fracture, because these are young bones, and when they break, they don't break through and through. It's like cracking a green stick. So those are the kinds of fractures you expect to see in a young toddler, not something like this with the humerus. So that would be something that the physician, the orthopedist, or whoever saw her, I would hope, got reported.
Yes, this one they absolutely thought that the story was not kosher that he gave.
Yeah, not at all. I know, what did he say? He was climbing the stairs or going down the stairs, and he fell, and he was trying to protect his arm, which was also broken.
Which had been broken, I guess.
Oh, had been broken. It wasn't currently broken.
I don't think so.
He was trying to protect that, and somehow Ayla took the brunt of the fall.
Yeah, that's a great dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I know you haven't seen the child and you can't say what happened, but can you give me an idea of what kind of abuse could cause that kind of injury to a 19-month-old? I mean, what would a parent do? Grabbing? I mean, I'm just wondering in general, what would cause that kind of injury?
Well, you'd almost have to grab it and forcibly break it.
Ooh.
If the child fell on her forearm, you'd expect a forearm fracture, not an upper arm fracture. And if she fell more on her elbow, you'd expect what are called supracondylar fractures, or fractures above the elbow, but still involving the elbow joint.
Okay.
So a fracture that involves the longer bone of the arm, in the upper arm, the humerus, That's all going to be something I'd look at as an intentional type of wound.
So the doctor did report this, and upset over Ayla's welfare, Trista said that Ayla was actually also dirty and upset during the visits that she was allowed to have with her during this time. And Trista filed for Ayla to return to her custody, and she did this on December 11th. So she's out of rehab. She finds that her daughter's arm's been broken. She doesn't feel like she's being cared for properly. And even though he never got legal custody of the child, when she called police, they said, well, that's a civil matter. There's nothing we can do about that. So she has to go into court and apply to get custody back. On December 11th, she does that.
Right. But again, this is just kind of mind-boggling to me. Mm-hmm. That there's evidence for some form of abuse at the hands of the father or his family. Doesn't she call the social worker or get some emergency injunction or something? I mean, this sounds like something that is actually an emergent problem. If the report has been made that there could be abuse and she files for emergency custody...
Well, according to DHHS, the injury had been reported and they were investigating it. I put that in finger quotes. It was under investigation. But as far as taking the child from him, they'd have to go through a whole process for that. They don't feel the child is in imminent danger for whatever reason.
Well, again, this is hindsight, but yes. It sure sounds like the child was in imminent danger.
Oh, yeah.
And they should have removed her from that home. But I'm being too harsh on the DHHS people.
Oh, God, I don't think so. I think this is really a failure of the system. They really failed this child. I think that's an obvious thing, that they failed this child. I'm not saying that the care of her mother was perfect, but they took this child out of a safe home and put her into a very dangerous situation.
And then did nothing when some bad stuff happened to the child. And said, well, it has to go through the courts.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So at this time, on behalf of Trista, the Portland attorney, Brian Husson, has filed under the Maine Tort Claims Act a notice of a potential suit against the state of Maine for this case. Now, that's on hold because we don't know what happened to Ayla. It's been almost 5 years.
Okay. So the suit was against the state for not acting quickly enough or acting appropriately?
Correct.
For Ayla.
Yes, for Karen Small, totally disregarding the law, basically, and for the child being given to someone that the child shouldn't have been given to. And actually, yeah. She did lie to the police as well.
And do we know if Karen Small still works for DHHS?
She doesn't, but I'm not sure if she was let go or what happened exactly.
Okay.
I don't know.
That's interesting.
I don't know if she was reprimanded in any way. Now, another interesting aspect of this part of the case is that the Maine Attorney General's office, they prosecute all homicides in Maine, right? They would be in charge of prosecuting this case if Ayla's case is found to be a homicide.
Right.
So the Attorney General's office also represents the Maine Department of Health and Human Services.
So that's kind of like double jeopardy or something.
Well, it is a conflict of interest for sure. Now, they also defend and represent the state and its agencies in all civil actions. So, if you take the behavior of DHHS in this case, it's really not clear how the inherent conflict of these roles is ever going to be resolved.
That's an interesting point. So, if they charged Justin with homicide...
Right, which many people think they should...
Then
I'd say me included, actually.
Then the state would be open, or the lawsuit would get to proceed. And if they don't charge him or they don't ever find the baby's body, we're in limbo.
Both civilly and criminally.
Right. Can't go to civil court
can't
or whatever?
Can't go to civil court, no. Well, I mean, you could, but you're not going to get anywhere at this point.
Whew.
Yeah. Interesting, huh? So we've talked a lot about what led up to this. Let's go back to December 17th, when Justin DiPietro says he got up in that morning and he could not find Ayla. She'd been tucked in around 9 o'clock the night before. So the people in that home that night were Justin himself, his sister Alicia DiPietro, and his girlfriend Courtney. What was Courtney's last name?
I have no idea.
Whatever. So his girlfriend Courtney, his sister Alicia, and Justin, they're the three people in the house with Ayla.
And we're going to believe that this child was abducted from the house?
Abducted or wandered away were the first ideas of what happened.
Okay. Yeah. Well, wandered away is easy. It was winter.
Right.
You should have found her body someplace.
Yeah, how far would a 20-month-old get in the dead of winter if she wandered out in the night?
Not far.
And would she even have the ability, really, to open a locked front door and leave? That's just...
unlikely.
Very unlikely. There were no signs of forced entry.
But even if you... I mean, I know what they're saying, that she must have been taken. Mm-hmm. But nobody woke up or heard anything.
Nope. And it wasn't even early morning. It was at 8:51 when he called the police.
Okay.
So I don't know if they were up drinking late the night before. Maybe that sounds judgy, but I'm just not having good feelings about these people. Him especially.
Well, he might have been busy killing his daughter.
That's what I think could be. That's definitely possible. Now, there's no forced entry. There's no footprints, no signs that she wandered off anywhere.
And there was snow on the ground, right?
Snow on the ground. The police come.
You should see footprints. How can you abduct a kid and not leave footprints?
Well, yeah. Initially, when the police arrived, they did a search of the area, thinking she'd wandered off. But there were no woods around. This was a neighborhood, like a working-class suburb.
Right. And no little tiny baby footprints?
Nope.
And no big people footprints?
Nope.
So there goes the wandering off for the abduction theory.
So initially they search the area, they search around the woods that weren't real close to the house. They also ended up checking some bodies of water. But the one thing that they did find eventually, not that day of course, but they found that Ayla's blood in the home. Now there was blood evidence and it was visible to the naked eye. And there was also some found with luminol. But do you want to go over the blood evidence that was found with the naked eye in the DiPietro home? It's extensive.
Well, there's a lot of blood.
Yeah.
So they found drops of her blood on the shoulder strap of her car seat. They found her blood on the pom-poms of her pink princess slippers. They found a stain of blood on the sofa in the upstairs living room. They found some smeared on her baby doll's face. And arms. It appeared that Ayla might have tried to wipe blood from her mouth with her doll. Okay, I don't know how they figured that. Mm-hmm. They found some blood on a fan cord in the basement bedroom. They found blood spatter on a plastic blue tote in the basement, and a sheet that was found inside had Ayla's blood stains on it. The medical examiner thought that this had been used to clean up her blood. And they also found some of her blood on the tongue and inside Justin's sneakers. And a fist-sized stain was found on his mattress and sheets. And it contains saliva, which has not been identified. Mm-hmm. And then, oh wow, there's still more.
I know.
Splatters of blood found on sections of cement floor and wall beside his bed, Justin's bed, and on a wooden pallet in the wall in the basement. On the wall in the basement. Yeah, that's a lot of blood.
Yeah, his bedroom there was actually in the basement.
Yeah, so why haven't they arrested this guy?
I don't know. The blood splatters were consistent with Ayla's standing height, and they were up to a dime in size. Now, the Maine State Police's blood analysts determined that the blood splatters were created by intense projectile vomiting or blunt force trauma. So I don't understand at all why he has not been arrested.
No, it sounds like this poor little girl was beaten to death.
It certainly does. It really does. It's disturbing. Now, the Maine State Police did determine that the samples of Ayla's blood that exhibited a spray pattern could not have been the result of any kind of cut. Some samples of her blood contained saliva. and that indicated to the Maine State Police that Ayla had been coughing up blood from internal injuries. Now, what does that mean? That she was just beaten in around her organs?
Yeah. I mean, if she was beaten and had internal hemorrhaging, she'd vomit blood or cough up blood.
Well, that's just the actions of a monster. I just can't even understand that.
As we did this case, we've known about this case for a few years, but as we read more facts about it...
Well, yeah, I didn't know a lot of this stuff.
It just seems so apparent to me that they should charge this guy.
Well...
And I'd love to know why he hasn't been charged.
Yeah, the state police also concluded that Ayla's injuries were internal and external. I don't know how they knew that, do you?
No, I don't know how you can determine that. I mean, I could see internal based on blood and saliva.
Mm-hmm.
But external, nope.
And it says the Maine State Police told Trista that they reviewed the evidence with the DePietro family in November of 2012. Now, Maine State Police said that Justin had no reaction to this. And in a subsequent conversation between Justin and Trista, Trista says that Justin said about the evidence, hey, it's no big deal. So Trista's impression of the photos of blood that she was shown by the police in and around Justin's basement bedroom was that the bedroom looked like a murder scene, and I would have to agree with her there.
Yeah, sure sounds like it.
Certainly does. The evidence that she died from a trauma at the house does seem to be abundant, I would say. And I would think that Justin DePietro, Alicia DePietro, his sister, and Justin's girlfriend, Courtney Roberts, I know that they are legally entitled to remain silent, but if you want to know what happened, why wouldn't you cooperate and try and help find out what happened to your daughter?
Yes, but if they know that Justin killed the baby,
right,
and we've got a sister who's going to protect her brother, and a girlfriend who's going to protect her boyfriend.
I'm sorry, I wouldn't protect anyone for this kind of crime.
But that's because you have a moral compass.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't do that. But these people don't sound so good.
No, that's putting it mildly. And Justin also claimed that he and Courtney slept that night in the basement. And that's a claim that is found preposterous by the Maine State Police, because his bed and the basement were splattered with Ayla's blood. It wasn't as if there was someone in the bed. You would see that there wouldn't be splatters there, right?
Right. There'd be a pattern.
Right. And he can't give police a credible explanation of this. The police have come right out and said that the people in the house that night have not given a believable story. It doesn't pass common sense. It doesn't pass the believability test.
Yeah, what do they call it? The straight face test?
The straight face test, yeah. So I don't understand, if it doesn't, why something isn't being done.
No, I would agree. It sounds like they have enough. I mean, I'm not a detective or a law enforcement person.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a district attorney who's going to give the okay to charge these people. But God, it sure sounds like there's enough to charge you.
Well, I understand they want to have as much evidence as possible so that they win when they do prosecute him. But this seems like adequate information. And I'm sure they have more than we do about what happened.
Absolutely.
Yep.
I mean, we can pretty much say she didn't wander off on her own.
Right.
And she wasn't abducted. So that doesn't leave too many other possibilities.
No.
And there's a lot of blood around this house. That's her blood. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, a news conference held by the state police in May of 2012 to discuss recent developments in the case, such as the discovery of that blood in the house and the number of people who were present at the time of her disappearance, they confirmed that the blood was more than a cupful of Ayla's blood. So what would that be, like a half a pint? That's a lot of blood for it.
Yeah, that's not a superficial cut or anything.
No.
But we've already heard that there's blood and saliva mixed together.
Yeah.
So she was vomiting up blood or coughing up blood.
Yeah, more blood than a small cup would produce, obviously. That's what they said. Yeah. Now, following her disappearance, there was a reward of $30,000 for information leading to her return, and that was posted by various Waterville businesses that wanted to help find her. It did generate about 1,200 leads, and many of them were from psychics, which after a few of those, they disregarded them and said, we're only going to take hard, real evidence.
Yeah, I would believe psychics about as much as I believe eyewitnesses.
Yeah, maybe less.
Maybe less.
Maybe less, yeah. Now, DiPietro, his brother Lance, and a mutual friend collaborated with the Laura Recovery Center to produce t-shirts, buttons, flyers, and other goods to spread awareness of Ayla's disappearance, but they got no feedback, no leads from any of that.
How noble of him.
Yep. Now, he didn't speak about his daughter's disappearance for the first 3 weeks after the story broke. Did you know that?
No.
And it was at that point that Trista, Ayla's mother, accused him of hiding something, which I'd say is a valid accusation.
Right.
Yeah.
So then he broke his silence and said some stupid-ass thing?
He never said much, did he? No, nothing significant.
No.
I mean, it was like a year later, in October of 2012, that police trawled the Messalonskee Stream. Is that how you say it?
That's a stream in Maine, yes.
Okay, all right.
So good pronunciation, by the way.
Thank you. I was just doing phonetics. So they trawled that stream looking for remains. Construction workers repairing a bridge artificially lowered the water level, and they didn't find anything. Other updates, March of 2014, Trista Reynolds sent a statement to the Morning Sentinel editor, and she said, I know I have to accept that my daughter's gone, because police had already said, was it in the 2012 statement that the police said they believed she was dead?
Right. They said that they have to assume that she's dead.
Yeah. No chance that she's alive at that point. And I don't think they would say that unless they had evidence that she was dead, really. They don't say that.
Right.
So she said she knows she has to accept that, but what she cannot accept is that Ayla's father has not been prosecuted.
Well, I would agree.
Yeah.
I don't know why he hasn't been charged with this.
I've seen other cases with much less. I know that it helps to have a body, but in this kind of case where it's a small child, who's so much easier to hide than an adult, right?
Yes.
I mean, a baby's body is obviously a lot easier to get rid of than an adult's body.
For sure.
And if you have that much blood, if you see that it's more blood than the child could survive losing, you think that you could just say from that it was a homicide.
Well, I mean, a half a cup is not that huge a hemorrhage. I mean, it's...
Well, how much blood does a 20-month-old child have in their body? I mean, an adult, it's what? I don't know. 6 quarts or something, or six
pints? Yeah, but I think it'd be in an 18, 20-month-old.
That's a tiny person.
Maybe 4 pints.
Yeah.
So half a pint was discovered.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's not enough for exsanguination, but it's more than just a superficial cut. They've got a lot of blood evidence.
Yeah, and this is only the stains that were left behind.
Right.
This is not...
Because you had mentioned, or somewhere we saw, that mm-hmm. it looked like there was an attempt to clean up some of the blood.
Well, yeah, the parts that they found with luminol were actually large smears on the cement floor. So obviously someone had taken some kind of water or solution and tried to clean it up. It makes no sense to me.
No, it doesn't.
No.
So maybe if people keep bringing this up, something will happen.
It's almost 5 years. I'm not feeling really confident about it.
It is.
I was thinking...
But have there been other podcasts or news updates or anything?
Not a lot. I've read these statements. There is a Facebook page and a website by Trista Reynolds, but it's all very Trista Reynolds-sided.
Well, sure.
Yeah. So I'm trying to just stick with the facts. And as far as facts go, there's really been no new information since they found the blood in 2012.
Yeah, and it just, again, I'm not law enforcement or district attorney or anything, but it just seems to me like there's more than enough grounds to charge this person.
Now, just to add to our profile of Justin DiPietro. December of 2014, DiPietro was arrested for domestic abuse of his girlfriend, Courtney Roberts. That's the one that was in his mother's house with him when Ayla went missing.
Right.
Now, I have a pretty good idea that she's probably an abused woman because he did it on the street. She didn't report that he had abused her. The only reason that he was arrested is because it was seen by other people. They'd had a public argument. He pushed her, grabbed her, and he was arrested on the street. I believe it was in Portland for that.
Well, yeah, I would always figure that something that spills over into public eye, public view, is just kind of the tip of the iceberg, that he's probably been doing that in the privacy of his home.
Well, totally. I think if you are going to push and hit someone in public, you're probably going to do 10 times worse than that at home,
yeah,
in the privacy of your home.
This is something you're used to doing.
So that kind of lends to the idea that Courtney might feel like she's under his thumb. She might be protecting him. She might not be a healthy, independently thinking woman. Right?
I would not think so. Oh. But maybe they could use that. Although it's been, well, it was December of 2014,
yeah,
so
it's
a year and
a half
ago.
Yeah.
So she hasn't done anything to say, oh, I have evidence that he killed his daughter.
No, no one's come forward. Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know. I would think that the police could get one of these people to say something. I know that he is lawyered up at this point, and he's not going to say anything.
Yeah, for sure.
But, you know, they don't seem like the super smartest people in the world. You think if they'd gotten them separated at the police station the day after she went missing and done some individual interrogations, and I don't know, maybe they did, but I'm thinking they didn't, that
yeah,
they could have
gotten
some information from at least one of them.
It would seem.
Yeah.
But we don't know how they were interviewed.
No.
I would think that they were interviewed individually, because that's how you do it.
Well, yeah.
But they also had time to go over their story and stick with it, so.
Well, sure. If they had time to clean up, it seems like they had time to talk about things.
Yeah.
And one thing I haven't been able to figure out is where DiPietro's mother was that night. I don't know if she worked a night shift or what, but why she wasn't there.
Right, that's
it was her house.
Her house, so
right.
She should be there.
Right. Now, to go back to Trista's statement, I got sidetracked here. Her statement said that she can't accept that Ayla's father hasn't been prosecuted, and that's where we went off the handle there, because we can't understand it either.
We don't.
So then she also said that there was so much evidence of Ayla's blood in the DiPietro house that it's obvious a crime was committed there. So even if it wasn't homicide, there is evidence that a crime was committed.
Yes.
I think we can all agree with that.
But nothing's happened with that.
No. Now, she also said, my daughter suffered greatly while in the care of her father, yet he's not being held accountable. I would agree with that.
Yes.
And her final question in the Sentinel was, why hasn't he been charged with at least endangering the welfare of a child? You don't need a body to prove that this crime was committed. So if you think about negligence, abuse, don't you think we could prove that kind of a crime against him with this situation?
One would think.
Mm-hmm.
So there must be something going on.
What do you mean?
Well, all I'm saying is that it seems like he should have been charged.
Mm-hmm.
So he's protected.
I don't know why he'd be protected. Another thing
It goes back, how did his mother convince the social worker to grant him custody?
Well,
I mean, there's something going
I think there's
on.
Something I mean, between those two women that they just thought they
women?
Could do what they wanted.
I'm big into conspiracy theories.
Okay, give me a conspiracy scenario here.
Well, maybe the agreement between the mother of Justin and the social worker was in a private matter, but the state doesn't want to get embarrassed at having screwed up this investigation so much, so they're dragging their heels on it.
Well,
how's that for a conspiracy theory?
I think that's true. I don't even question that. That, to me, is a fact.
Oh, I thought I was laying some bombshell on you.
No, I totally was thinking that anyway. Yep.
Yeah, but so then the question is, well, why would they do that?
I don't know. Another thing that really came to me with this, I don't know, hopefully some of our listeners listened to the cast we did on Madeleine McCann. How old was she? She was three, almost four. And she disappeared in, where were they on vacation?
Portugal.
Portugal, that's right. So her parents were physicians, and obviously much higher prestige in the community or in society in general, I'd say. And they spared no expense in the search for her. I don't feel like the same was given to this girl based on her social class.
No, the best I could do was a $30,000 reward.
And that was gathered up by the community of stores.
Right.
Now, when it was Madeleine McCann, Scotland Yard actually went into a $95 million investigation to find out what happened to Madeleine.
Right. But as you said, they're upper class Caucasians. These are lower class Caucasians.
Yeah. Or could it be the United States? That's another thing. Although I don't really think it is. I think I've seen other cases in the UK with poorer children where not nearly as much attention is given.
I don't think it's the US
specifically. No.
Maybe the state of Maine.
Maybe. But I don't think that they put the priority on the welfare of children that we would expect or want from our society.
Well, that's my bias because I'm a pediatrician. Look out for your kids.
Yeah.
And they're not doing that for this one.
No. No, I don't think so. Now, also in November of 2015, DiPietro was arrested and found guilty of an OUI. So he's had, since her disappearance, he's had 4 arrests for various crimes. And he's still out there, not working, not taking care of, I don't know how many children he has now, but he at least has that other one that he didn't get the life insurance policy on.
Right.
I'm hoping he never got paid the $25,000 on the life insurance policy he bought for Ayla.
Well, I guess if she hasn't been officially declared dead, he won't get any money.
I wonder how much it cost him to do that and where he got the money.
Well, it wasn't too long before she disappeared that he did that, so.
No, 2 months. So he would have had to make 2 appointments, I guess.
A couple payments.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the domestic violence stuff and the OUI taken in with the other information makes you hate him even more. But those aren't that related.
No.
Maybe the domestic violence is. But the OUI, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know. An OUI certainly doesn't make him a murderer. But we're not seeing that he's a valuable member of society.
No.
Not in any way.
Basically a scumbag.
Yeah, I kind of think so. And regardless, no one knows what happened to Ayla.
Well, somebody does.
Yes, but it hasn't been solved. No one's been held accountable. How about if I say that?
That's okay. Let's say that. And let's say to the state of Maine, let's charge this guy.
There have actually been statements by 3 or 4 organizations in Maine saying, please, if you're not going to charge him, then let's at least release cold case information to the public. And actually they said for people, so that people who do podcasts and articles can bring this information out to the public and it can be solved by the public.
Wonderful idea.
And that's when, I understand how you keep information to yourself when you're doing the initial investigation, but once your investigation isn't getting you anywhere, then you need to go to other sources.
No question about that, so.
So if we could get more information out there, maybe somebody could come forward who knows a little more about it. There's usually someone out there who knows more.
Possibly.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the people that know what's going on are the people that were in the house that night. So let's talk to them.
Okay. Let's give them a call.
Okay. Courtney, drop the dime on Justin.
That's right. Alicia, if your brother killed your niece, don't protect him.
No.
He could do it to another child.
He might have.
Well, fascinating, complex case, but also, as I said before, heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's always tough when little kids go missing.
I know, they're the most innocent people who don't deserve something like this.
Nope.
And she's really was just at the whims of her father. She had no way of protecting herself.
None at all.
And it's terrible that there were 2 other women there that didn't protect her either.
Well, they're as much to blame as the perpetrator.
I believe so, too. So if you want more information on this case, you can actually go to Trista Reynolds' website or the Facebook page. There's also a lot of information on YouTube, a lot of the news reports for the time when this incident occurred. And if you'd like to find out more about us at True Crime Brewery, We have a website. It is www.tiegrabber.com, and there is where you can find out more. You can read information about the podcast. You can listen to the podcast there as well. If you want to give some support, you can give as little as $1 a month with PayPal to support our podcasts and our future podcast production. We also have a Patreon account, and we will take any donations you have there. Also, if you'd like to just chat with us or give us some information, if you would like to request that we cover a certain case that interests you, something maybe we don't know about, we'd love to hear from you. So you can email us, and that's at truecrimebrewery@tiegrabber.com. Also, if you go to our webpage on the right, there's a little area you can click where it says send voicemail, and you can send a voicemail right over the computer, and you can say what's on your mind, what you'd like us to do, and we'd be happy to hear from you. We love to hear from our listeners. Now, if you don't want to give money to help us out right now, we understand that. You know, we work hard for our money. What you can do to help us out anyway is you can actually go to iTunes and leave us a review. Now, a 5-star review is much appreciated, and a 5-star review will be read on one of our future casts with a very generous thank you. I'm Jill.
I'm Dick.
Until next time, take care of each other.
See you later.